This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Well, we did it. We've made it to episode 100 of the TriDot Podcast, and we're still here to talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Every 25 episodes, we shut down the normal programming to do a Your Questions Answered episode. So every question in today's main set came straight from you, our audience. In honor of episode 100, we're going big, y'all. There are five of us on the episode today. It's basically going to be bananas. I've got the TriDot Director of Coaching, John Mayfield, Professional Triathlete, Elizabeth James, TriDot Vice President of Marketing, Matt Bach, and TriDot Coach, Jeff Rains, all on with us today. They are all gifted athletes, wise coaches, and now seasoned podcasters. So, hey, is everybody ready for episode 100?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And gosh, what a fun way to celebrate with so many of us on here today.
Triple digits. Man, time flies when you're having fun.
I'm Andrew, the Average Triathlete, voice of the people and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our athlete question main set conversation, and then wind things down with our cool down. Shout out to TriTats for partnering with us on today's podcast. Whether you're a seasoned Ironman or gearing up for your first local sprint try, TriTats will help you make your mark. These tough, stylish, and easy-to-use race number tattoos make you look and feel like a pro. I've raced countless local sprint and Olympic tries where I showed up thinking I would have plenty of time to settle into transition, only to find a massive line waiting to be body marked. Switching to TriTats has allowed me to show up on race morning with my focus on the finish line and not the body marking line. I can put my race number on at home and walk right into transition to prep my gear for the race. Friends, don't let friends race with Sharpie on numbers. So as a friend of the podcast, head to TriTats.com and use promo code TRIDOT for 10% off your order. Again, that's TriTats.com, promo code TRIDOT.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
The world of social media and apps are ruled by the mighty algorithm, and something that really helps a show shoot up the podcast listings are ratings, reviews, and folks subscribing to the show. Any show that I'm a fan of, I make a point to leave a rating and review as well as subscribe to them, and a huge thank you to everyone who has done just that for the TriDot Podcast. Between the awesomeness of our show and all of you listening, subscribing, and leaving us a rating, we are now the top-ranked triathlon show on the health and fitness chart, and we are one of the top-searched triathlon shows, and y'all helped make that happen, so thank you so much. Guys, for our warm-up question today, as I'm kind of sharing that information, you know, we're on our 100th episode. We have over 200 rating and reviews on the Apple Podcast app, and so of all of those reviews, which one is your favorite? Coach Jeff Rains, let's start with you.
The one that I chose here is from Matt Zoom. It's titled Packed Full of Info. I think he just nails it here. I'm going to read it. First, I love the host. Shout out to Mr. Andrew.
Well, thanks, Matt. Thanks.
He has a great...
Thanks, Matt Zoom.
He says, he has a great voice and demeanor. He is clearly well-prepared and is fun to listen to. I identify with him because I am also the captain of the middle of the pack. That's arguable because
yes,
there can only be
it.
One captain, Mr. Matt, you or Andrew.
No, I'll share it. I can share.
He goes on to say, I have been catching up and have listened to 5 episodes in the last week. These are amazing. They are packed solid with tips and info for new and experienced athletes. I am a short to intermediate course athlete who fights for age group podiums and have competed 57 triathlons and 15 duathlons and still managed to teach me new stuff. The podcasts have also single-handedly brought back my love for the sport. Full disclosure, I have been a TriDot athlete for almost 4 years and am a true believer in the method and analytics. Before TriDot, I was the guy nervous at the swim start. Now I step into the water and rip it. The podcast is the perfect companion to the training. Remember, if you have trained with big data and have listened to the tips from the TriDot folks, you are probably better prepared than the guy or gal next to you on the starting line. I can't wait to listen to new ones to come.
Wow, I mean, two things there for me. I mean, obviously, I love how kind Matt Zoom was to me at the beginning of his review. But I also love there at the end, just kind of the point that, hey, if you have done the training and you've listened to the coaches on the podcast, you know, you are probably better prepared than the people next to you at the starting line of your race. What a confidence booster to kind of have that mentality, knowing that if you've done your homework and you've done the learning, you're going to be ready to rock and roll. So that's a great pick, Jeff. Elizabeth James, which one did you pick?
All right. The one that I chose is titled Interesting, Incredible, and Informative. And this comes from Laura Loves Healthy Living. Mm. And she says, this is one of the best hours of the week. And what a great start there. She goes on to say, the TriDot podcast is an incredible tool in your triathlon training toolbox. It is engaging, personable, and enjoyable. I've learned so much from triathlon equipment to nutrition and from training to race execution. John, Jeff, Coach EJ, Andrew, Dr. Austin, and all of the specialists they bring in provide an hour of top-notch information to start your week off right. And I can say that this one for me hit home, because as a former teacher, and if I know who this Laura is, I believe she's a teacher as well, when she talks about how much she's learned, that just made me really happy. Because that's, I think, one of the things that makes me most excited about doing these podcast episodes is the education that we can pass along to the athletes listening.
Yeah, and I love that Laura just by name, you know, mentioned all of y'all that are just regularly on the podcast. I mean, I'm so thankful. I mean, I'm just one guy. I can sit here and ask the questions all day long, but y'all's expertise coming on and teaching me and teaching all the other captains of the middle of the pack, in the back of the pack or the mid front of the pack, you know, wherever our listeners land in the pack, y'all just teach us so much. So thanks to each and every one of you for lending your voice to the show, every single Monday. Matt Bach, which podcast review are you going with here?
Yeah, there's so many great ones, but the one that really I loved and decided to pick for this is from Hey SYB. And it's want to be faster in your swim? Listen to TriDot. Want tips and tricks for having a speedier bike? Listen to TriDot. PR that run? Listen to TriDot. The host brings on some great guest coaches and experts in related areas to help you through a lot of the mental and physical challenges that occur during triathlon racing. What am I listening to on my long rides? TriDot podcasts. There's so many fans, and this is just really sums it up really well.
Yeah, Hey SB really gets it, right? I mean, like that we could copy paste that paragraph, and like that could be like the promo paragraph for the show. Like, just absolutely nails like what we're the essence of what we're trying to be. So that's a really great pick there, Matt. John Mayfield, which review are you picking here?
So I'm going with Tri Night One, short, sweet, no title, just defiantly not an infomercial. So a little bit of a backstory there, but love the review. Defiantly not an infomercial.
I'm sure that Tri Night meant to say definitely not an infomercial, but defiantly kind of works too, right? I mean, we really intentionally, you know, try to remain neutral. We try to make sure that whether you train with TriDot or not, you will benefit from this podcast. Obviously, when we talk about training, you know, we believe in the TriDot approach. We believe in, you know, using the data and having data drive the training. So yes, of course, when we're talking about training theory, we have to talk about TriDot. I'm glad that, and that wasn't the only one, John. There were several people that pointed that out, that, hey, this is not a infomercial for the platform, that this is just great triathlon coaching. We did, so from our 200-something reviews, there was one negative one. Pretty much everybody gave us 4 and 5 stars. There was one review that gave us 1 star. It was one of the earliest reviews. It's from a guy named Steady Steve. So whoever Steady Steve is, he felt like we were an infomercial. I don't know what episode he listened to, but you know, we really try to not be that way. And so Steady Steve, if you're out there, we love you, buddy. We hope your training is going well, whatever you're using to train. Hey guys, just a quick reminder, if you have not gone and left us a quick rating and review, we would obviously love for you to do so. It just really helps our show find its way to new listeners. And for everybody who's already done so, thank you so much. for helping us land where we are in the charts. Couldn't do it without you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being here. And can't wait to move this on to the athlete question main set.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
We recently had sports scientist Andy Blow from Precision Hydration on the show, and we learned that there isn't a one-size-fits-all approach to hydration because everyone loses a different amount of salt in their sweat. As someone who sweats a lot, I wanted to get a better understanding of how much salt I lose in my sweat, so I took their online sweat test. After taking the test, I received a personalized hydration plan and was recommended their strongest electrolyte drink, PH 1500, which is 3 times stronger than most sports drinks. It's been a game changer for me, particularly in hot conditions. I was drinking it just this last week on course racing Alcatraz. If you've ever struggled with hydration issues like dehydration or cramping during long hot sessions, it's worth checking out precisionhydration.com. You can take their free online sweat test, find out which pH strength matches how you sweat, and then get 10% off your order with the code TRIDOT10. To learn more, you can even book a free 20-minute video consultation with them to ask any questions that you have about hydration and fueling, or to even discuss your strategy for an upcoming race. So again, that's precisionhydration.com and use the code TRIDOT10 to get 10% off your electrolytes and fuel. And while I'm mentioning Alcatraz, I'm actually reminded that I'm still wearing my Tri-Tats from the race at Alcatraz even this past weekend. Apparently, I need to shower a little better to get these puppies off. So yeah, John, you've already got yours off, correct?
That's weird, Andrew.
That day, I don't mess around with that.
Now, we have some fantastic audience questions to run through today. We threw it out to you, our audience, on the I Am Trout Facebook group and had so many of you chime in with good questions. So I want to say this. If you submitted a question and it does not get asked today, know that I've already selected several of your questions for episode 125, where we'll do more audience questions. And also this, we had several questions that we received this go-around that we actually plan on turning into entire podcast episodes in the near future. So we had some questions about swim drills. We had some questions about competing in duathlon and aquathons. We had questions about breathing and bike fits. We had questions about racing short course. And we have questions about exercising in the cold. Several things that we plan on hitting much more in-depth on shows here in the very, very near future. So if you throw out a question and you don't hear it today, know that content for you is coming very, very soon. So with that said, I will get us going with question number one for today. This one comes from Jerry Dugan. He is an athlete from Illinois, and he said this. What is the one thing that you would change for your next race to improve your performance? So I wanted to start with this one today. It's a nice personalized question. Coach Matt Bach, so for you, what would you change heading into your next race?
Yeah, for me, for my next long, hot race, better manage my hydration. So I lost in my last big, serious race was in Kona, and I lost 17 pounds, or about 11 to 12% of my body weight when I last raced Kona. So studies show that anything over 2 to 3% of your body weight, you start to impair performance. So needless to say, I was probably hampering my performance pretty badly, given that I had lost 17 pounds worth of water weight. So that I see that as low hanging fruit for me. And the folks at Precision Hydration and others are very well adept or well educated on the impact of hydration.
Yep. No, that's a great one, Matt. And glad you get to revisit that before your next race. Professional athlete Elizabeth James, what are you going with here?
So for me, it's going to be staying with the pack a little bit longer during that pro swim start. It is just so fast. Definitely has been a different experience for me than starting in that rolling start as an age grouper. So I've been practicing some faster starts and then kind of settling into my pace. And if I can use that and draft a little bit more and help cut down on that deficit out of the water, that would help improve my overall finish time and my performance on race day.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, the wave start isn't something that most of us do. And now that you're in that pro field, you're doing it every single time you race. So really cool to kind of hear that. That's something that the pros practice. I wouldn't even think about that as I head to the pool for my swim set. Coach John Mayfield, what are you, now the next three of us sharing here, myself, Coach John Mayfield, and Coach Jeff Raines, our last race was Escape from Alcatraz Triathlon, days ago at the time we're recording this podcast. So Coach John Mayfield, between that and your next race, Ironman Maryland, what are you tweaking? What are you improving?
So for me, kind of like Matt, for me, it's hydration and nutrition. Over the years I've gotten by. But I see that too, as I think even Matt referred to it as some low hanging fruit. I think that's something that, I can further refine, get better, and support all that race potential. Cause it's one of those things where you can do all that training, you get the fitness ready, the race readiness, but you know, you're a bad, or mis-executed hydration, nutrition plan, and all that training, all that fitness, all that race readiness just goes out the door. So, trying to really nail that down, get it dialed in, which I feel like I've got a race rehearsal this weekend. So looking forward to testing it and confirming that. And then I've also, over the last about year, really, really emphasized strength training to getting back in the gym, and supplementing the swim, bike, run with the strength training.
Very cool. Coach Jeff Rains, between Alcatraz and your next race, what are you tweaking? What are you working on?
EJ was saying, you know, she wants to, you know, kind of come out of the water a little bit ahead, so she's not playing maybe catch up on the bike. I'm kind of that same way, except it's the bike for me. I like to make my comeback on the run. The run is my favorite and arguably my best discipline. So something I've been focusing on for over a year now, is my cycling. And so I'm really excited in my next race, a race coming up, to really be more confident on the bike.
Well, particularly with that, that sweet, sweet, sweet tri-rig, Omni bike that you've got now, expecting and hoping that you have a great race the next time you're out on the bike course. So, for me, just what Elizabeth said on the swim with staying in the pack. I don't like contact on the swim. I like clean water in front of me. I like kind of getting on the edge of the group and being able to sight and not having, legs and arms, you know, flailing in front of me. I've really been focusing on knowing, okay, my next swim, it's a full distance Ironman, and I can save so much energy and I can come out of the water so much quicker, with less work. If I just learn to tuck in with a group, tuck in behind some people who are of a similar ability. And so Alcatraz, honestly, the swim at Alcatraz was a great way to practice that. Now it was different for a different reason there, at Alcatraz. I was scared of the sharks, and so I wanted to stick with other swimmers. But it kind of gave me the motivation to try to stay next to, other people and stay close to them. And so it was a nice practice session at that. And so the next time I head out for Ironman Waco, I'm really going to be focusing on, instead of looking for clean water in front of me, looking for feet in front of me and following those feet to make that swim just a little bit easier.
And and running away from catfish instead of sharks in Waco.
Very different marine life in the Brazos River from San Francisco Bay. Great point. Question number two. This comes from Terry Bergen. He's one of our athletes from Oklahoma. What are the best ways to climb hills from a time perspective? Do you increase watts or power up climbs and then accelerate on the downhills to get your speed? Should we just keep the watts static regardless of flats, climbs, or downhills? This, I would think, applies to the bike and the run. Do you shorten your stride on the climbs to lengthen your stride on the downhill? Explain how RaceX works in selecting the best pacing in layman's terms. So this is from Terry, just a question, all things going up and down hills on race day. Matt Bach, what are some notes here?
Yeah, so actually just on a recent podcast episode, 20 training tips for a better bike split, I gave this tip, and it aired just a few weeks ago in episode 97. Definitely worth revisiting, though. It's a great one. I got this tip from a very strong triathlete. His name is Tim Smith, and he did Ironman Texas. I remember back in, I think it was 2014 or 2015 when he gave me this tip. And as everybody knows, Ironman Texas is a kind of rolling-ish type of hill, and he was living in New York City area, so there's these rolling hills. And he told me that you want to hold fairly steady, maybe allow the watts to increase something like 10 or 20 watts on the uphills, and then burn the match over the top to get back up to speed before backing off by maybe 10 or 20 watts on the way down, maybe more, depending on how steep that downhill is. So that's different than what a lot of people do, which is kind of just go ballistic up the hill, and then they get up to the top and they go, oh, okay, I made it. And then they ease off, and then it takes them a while to get back up to speed. So you're kind of losing a bunch of time there. And you're also, you know, you're burning that maybe that same match going up that hill, but then you're just losing time. So take those watts and be smart with those watts by cresting the hill strong.
Yep. No, love that for the bike. That's absolutely great stuff for the bike. Elizabeth, he also talked about RaceX here. And I know that you've raced a couple times with RaceX. What do we need to know in terms of how RaceX will have us handle hills?
Yeah, I'm really glad that Terry mentioned RaceX in his question, because RaceX is going to optimize your race time based on the elevation changes of the terrain. And so I think kind of a short answer to his question is that no, you should not hold the same power throughout the entire course unless it's pancake flat. If there's changes in the terrain, then your fastest bike split or run split is going to come from managing that and varying your power. And so RaceX is going to segment the course into kind of where there are those different elevation changes, and then it's going to prescribe power targets for each of those particular segments.
No, good to know. And I was able to use RaceX in San Francisco for Alcatraz, and I'm excited to have the power of RaceX, you know, telling me step by step what power I need to be holding while I'm on the course in Waco coming up in October. Jeff Rains, just as our run expert, what would you add here in terms of the best way or the best things to be thinking about as we're going up and down hills on the run course?
Yeah, we've got to touch on, you know, how this pertains to running, obviously, and you know, it's a tough question. It depends. I mean, because everybody's cadence and philosophy is a little bit different, and not two runners are the same. But you know, we know that for the most part, your cadence, at least on flats, your cadence should not change by much, regardless of speed. So as your speed changes, your cadence should not change a ton. Now, as this relates to uphill and downhill, it will be manipulated a little bit. Some of the range of motion of your knee drive. So you kind of touched on it there in your question. Your stride does shorten a little bit. Your fists may travel up a little bit higher, closer to your chin on an uphill, depending on how much of an incline that hill is. So if traditionally your fists don't come up higher, maybe on a flat, than your lower breast line or chest line, it may come up a little bit higher as you're shortening the stride and increasing that knee drive. But something that on the hills that will change probably the most is your body lean will be manipulated a little bit in your arm carriage. And a lot of tri coaches actually promote a more acute elbow angle as you run uphill and even just in general in the sport of triathlon. So if 90 degrees is kind of that elbow hinge safe number or angle, let's say that perfect L, just coming off of the bike in a triathlon, you're starting a marathon, half marathon, slightly fatigued. And a lot of coaches will, encourage their athletes to stay closer to maybe 80 degree elbow angle and close that arm angle a little bit to keep you a little bit more upright so you don't overly hinge at the hips, just to kind of keep your body upright, not promoting that body lean come from the hips, but it comes from the ankles. So something on hills that we do is tend to kind of bend over a little too much or hinge at the hips when we don't want to do that. And keeping that elbow angle slightly more acute than 90 degrees on uphills can keep the upper body a little bit taller so that it will allow for better knee drive. And better knee drive equates to better stride length or DPS or distance per stride and can give you an extra 10 to 15 seconds of free speed per mile, let's say. So there's a lot we could go on and on, but absolutely your cadence will change a little bit just as it does on the bike.
I got to say, you know, recently, racing Escape from Alcatraz, I was on the run course running with my good friend, John Mayfield, and the few moments on that course where we hit uphills, I was a little bit quicker up the uphills than John Mayfield. And as soon as we hit a downhill, John would just pull away from me on the downhill. So John is a much better descender than I am. So we learned that in Alcatraz.
Well, I also have like 50 pounds on you, so there's a little bit of gravity assisted there.
I wasn't going to say it. I'm glad you said it. But yeah, thank you for explaining the reasoning there. So question number three, this comes from Noelle Cuomo-Cutter. She's one of our athletes from the New York area, so potentially close to Matt Bach. Any strength training recommendations for building muscles to support the aero position? As a mom of four, my core has taken a beating. Aero is always super tough to hold for long periods of time. Thanks. I think this is something that can be difficult for everybody. How can we practice and how can we strength train to hold that position?
So I'm going to jump in here first and just say that core work is important for all disciplines. So, you know, not just the bike, not just the aero position. And it's something that all triathletes should be doing. They should be training their core. So don't neglect your strength training. I know a couple of us on the podcast here today mentioned that as a focus. And, you know, I would say for athletes with strength training prescribed in your training plan, you're going to see core exercises listed. So don't skip those. It's going to help you in all disciplines.
So part of it too is simply doing it, is riding in aero as much as possible. So it's a unique position. It's not really something that you can feasibly replicate around the house or at the office. You know, you would certainly get some weird looks if you sat working at your laptop in the aero position, but it's a very unnatural position, especially with the neck, the shoulders. That's where we tend to fatigue early on, and really the best, easiest way to do that is simply to do it. So I think there's even a intentionality of going out and riding as much as possible with that. And maybe it starts with, I know for me, like every spring, I get back on the roads after several months of being indoors on the trainer. I don't stay in the aero position as much on the trainer. So those muscles are neglected. So definitely those first couple sessions out back on the road, I'm feeling it. The neck's getting tired. My shoulders are getting sore. But in time, just like everything else, you rebuild your stamina and the ability to hold that aero position increases as well. So it's kind of one of those things that you just kind of have to do it to be able to do it. The more you do it, the better you're going to be able. So be intentional with it. And yeah, I would say especially for those that are going to be racing long flat courses, you need to really focus on this because you're going to be in that aero position for a long time. Some of your hillier courses, more technical courses, you're naturally going to have opportunities to sit up and move around in the saddle. Whereas on a long flat course, your best time is going to come from staying aero, but you have to be careful not to fatigue those muscles and then end up in a place where you're having to sit up just to remain comfortable and to be able to continue to generate power. So it's just one of those things. It's part of training. So train your heart, train your lungs, train those muscles, and train your aero position.
Question number four. This comes from Melissa Miller from Washington State. When life takes a big bite out of training, like for weeks, what is the safest way to jump back in? Going straight 7 out of 7 training days with some double workouts, you know, would be overwhelming and clearly unsafe. What do you recommend, assuming someone does not have any injuries?
So I refer to this as the hierarchy of training variables. So it doesn't really matter what you're coming back from. This is a similar sequence of how to return, whether it was a short-term illness, a short-term injury, a long-term illness, or just some time away where you lost some fitness. The first thing you want to reestablish is the frequency. So she mentioned getting back to training 7 days a week. That's one of the first things you want to be able to reestablish is getting back into that training frequency. So probably not a great idea to jump in 7 days, kind of depending on what you're coming back from and what your level is. That may be, but you know, maybe it's a day on, day off. Maybe it's 2 or 3 days on, 1 day off. Again, whatever works for you, whatever's appropriate for whatever it is that you're coming back from. Then we want to reestablish the volume. So if you were doing, say, 1 hour sessions, in the beginning, you may do 30-minute sessions, whatever is appropriate for you. It could start as little as maybe 15 to 20 minutes. Maybe you can jump right back into 1 hour. So you want to reestablish the volume. So now we've got the frequency, the volume, and the last thing we want to add back is the intensity. So once you're back to being able to train on a regular basis, once you're back to those volumes that you were accustomed to prior, then you can add back in the intensity. And like all of those, it's important to add all of those back at a rate of increase that's appropriate for your fitness, whatever you're bouncing back from. I would always encourage people to be conservative. It's one of those things where oftentimes, whether it's an injury or illness, if you do any of these at a rate that is faster than you should, the worst case scenario is going back into whatever it was. You can get sick again, you can get re-injured, and that's only going to delay your ability to get back to training. That's going to reduce how fit you are on race day. So take your time, be a little conservative, add back frequency, volume, then intensity, and you're good to go.
So John, just to give everybody a tangible example of what you're talking about, because I've said on the podcast before, I am a oft injured athlete. I'm easily injured. Particularly with running, I've got to kind of watch my body and keep tabs on how everything's feeling. Recently I've had some foot pain where under one of my metatarsals, there's just a lot of pressure. It kind of felt almost like the bone was bruised there on the bottom of my foot. And so I had to back off running. And so for 2 to 3 weeks, I didn't do a single run, just knowing that that area needed some rest. Not ideal in an Ironman training cycle, of course, but had to do what I had to do to get healthy. And so I let me take a couple weeks off running, see what happens here. My first run in about 3 weeks was actually the 8 mile race at a portion of Alcatraz over the weekend. And thankfully, no foot pain there. Did a 20-minute run here this week. And so coming off that race, having rested it for a little bit, no running for 3 weeks. I'm doing the frequency. I'm doing every single run that TreadOut has scheduled for me to do. But I will be shortening those just a little bit. And so my Wednesday run was supposed to be 50 minutes. I did my Wednesday run at more 30-ish. My Sunday run coming up is going to be an hour and 10 minutes. So I'll probably do more like 45 or 50. And then assuming everything feels good, we'll kind of get back more to normal next week. So just to give everybody a tangible example of exactly what you're saying, John.
So an 8 mile race is probably not the best way to start, but you nailed the rest of it. So good job.
It had to get done. The race had to get done. Question 5 comes from Brandy Ramirez. She's actually one of our coaches from the Arizona area. She asked, we all have a secret tip or trick. What is your key weapon that you don't usually share with others? Now, I saw this question and I wanted to throw it out to you guys because I was curious to see what you had to say. I feel like on the podcast, we're a pretty open book. I don't think any of you guys are playing your closest card to the chest. I could be wrong though. So I wanted to throw it out and see what we had to say. Matt Bach, what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I agree. Definitely open book. There's nothing that we're holding back or anything. But I think one key fundamental thing is that when, for the most part, there is really no silver bullet. So when you're first starting in triathlon, there are some things that you can do that will lop off many, many minutes or hours even off of your race times. But I fall squarely in the camp that for most of us, once we've sort of trimmed that very low-hanging fruit, have gotten our training in order, for instance, then there is no real silver bullet, but instead a smattering of smaller things that you can do that end up adding up to some bigger things. So I actually recently just wrote an article for USA Triathlon called 5 Tips for Free Speed, which encompasses some of my tips. But here are some of them that are included from that article, but also elsewhere. So in this camp of aerodynamics or free speed, right? By free speed, we mean something that you don't have to pay for with fitness. You don't have to get faster, but you get free speed. You might have to pay lots of dollars for that free speed in terms of helping you get more aerodynamic through gear for something like an aero helmet, for instance. You may pay, $100 to $300 depending on what aero helmet you're getting, but it's considered kind of free speed, right? Because you don't have to actually get any faster, but apples to apples, you're still going to go faster because you're now wearing an aero helmet. So that's one of those things that has definitely been proven to help. And getting a sleeved tri-kit, there's been lots of research and anecdotal evidence showing that sleeved tri-kits that really fit well, there can't be a lot of creases or wrinkles, those are faster in the wind tunnel and will be faster on you. Again, not by a massive amount, but you might save 30 seconds or a minute or 2 minutes over what you currently have, and those types of little things could add up. Another one for the guys, shave those legs, and that's been out for years, but put the ego aside, throw on the Italian opera and shave those legs. You'll definitely save some speed there, save some time there, especially if you're a hairier sort of Chewbacca style person. One of the things that was huge for me was incorporating UCAN into my fueling approach. That's why I ended up working for the company for 2.5 years. I had lots of GI distress and that rid it for me. So that for me was almost like a secret weapon of sorts. And then one thing that I've preached for a long time, which is set up the infrastructure of your training. So for me, this was absolutely critical in the realm of training because I discovered that training with people was game changing for me. I found that my motivation and the structure and how hard I pushed myself or how easy I went and how the time went by on the easier days, like all those things got much better and much easier to do and managing my training and getting the most out of my training when I was actually training with people. Maybe it's for master swim or things like that. So setting up the infrastructure for training, knowing where you're going to be and how economically you can set up your life, how efficiently you can set up your life so that you're not spending tons of time, say, commuting back and forth to the pool or getting set up with such and such a thing. So set up the infrastructure for training and find the right way to train most effectively given your life situation.
So Matt, maybe you inadvertently did provide a secret tip in there, because I've been shaving for years, but I've never shaved to Italian opera. So, but I've got, like I said, I've got a race rehearsal coming up, so it's time to shave.
Have you ever seen Breaking Away?
And now it's time. From, yeah, like now 1970s? It's time to crank up the Italian opera. Yeah, yeah. I've just been doing it wrong, apparently.
Moving on to question six. This comes from Carrie Lubinow from Massachusetts, and Carrie actually just became an Ironman in Lake Placid. Congratulations to Carrie. She said, I'd love to hear a bit about goal setting. As a former coach, goal setting was a huge priority for me in my coaching role, and I spent a fair amount of time developing and tracking progress of my team towards their goals. As I've shifted to focusing more on my own training, I am realizing that while I have identified goals, I am far less structured in tracking them than I was when I was coaching a team sport. I would love to hear how each of our TriDot coaches approaches goal setting and tracking with athletes and in their own training.
I love goal setting, so I'm going to kind of jump in here on this one.
Yes, do it.
I mean, you have kind of a different perspective here a little bit from coaches and athlete side. I'll speak to the athlete perspective on this one. I have a daily journal that I write in, and in the morning I read my devotion, I take my vitamins, and I set a short-term goal for the day. And so that's kind of my morning routine. And it's just one thing each day that I focus on. And it could be something like I'm going to outline my nutrition plan for an upcoming race, or I'm going to attend an open water swim practice, or I'm going to make sure that today I don't skip my strength training workout. It really can be anything, but something that can be done in that day and accomplished that day. And setting just one small goal each day really helps me accomplish that task, and then is good feedback, helps me feel successful. So at night, I'll take my nighttime vitamin, brush my teeth, and then initial that I'm at the goal for the day. So kind of my morning and evening routine to do some daily goal setting.
I love the short-term goal for the day. That is awesome. And it's kind of what I was thinking of, from the coaching side, let's say. When I'm talking with my athletes about goal setting, I promote like stepping stone goals or micro goals, maybe not like every single day. So as an athlete, I think you can do that individually, just like EJ did. I think that's amazing. From a coaching standpoint, let's say your Ironman's in 6 months from now. Well, let's pick a goal by, a monthly goal, or maybe, four stepping stone goals to hit along the way to that big end-all be-all A race goal, maybe, let's say. It could be, by the end of this month, you're going to find the perfect wetsuit for you. You're going to, get 3 open water swims in. By the end of this month, we're going to get a bike fit done, and we're going to do a swim analysis, one-on-one. Things like that, little stepping stone goals to get you excited along the way, kind of keep you on track, keep the morale there, the focus. So stepping stone goals, big time.
Yeah, and for me, it's the same thing as Jeff. I break them down. So write them up in a Word doc or a spreadsheet. Make sure that they're in paper, and then I always do race recaps or race summaries afterwards, and I'll write down a bunch of detail afterwards. So basically, I'm checking off to see like, hey, what kind of goals did I hit here, and what kind of goals did I not hit, and what kind of goals should I reset for the future. So I post some of the big goals near my bed, so that when I wake up in the morning, like on a post-it note maybe, so that when I wake up in the morning, it's a reminder. Sometimes it acts as motivation to get out of the bed when it's 5:30 in the morning or whatever it is, and it's freezing and it's in the winter and it's dark, and it's like you need something sometimes just to get you out of the bed. But then this all kind of comes down with the goals and breaking them down. But there's a whole bunch of quotes out there like that, right? It's one very pertinent to us, which is like, how do you run a marathon? You take that first step. You do it one step at a time. How do you eat an elephant, right? One bite at a time. So it's sometimes these big goals can seem really just audacious and really impossible. But if you take them one step at a time and break them down, it's that much better.
Number seven. This comes from athlete Hillary Mock from Nevada. And we met Hillary in Coeur d'Alene. Coach John Mayfield, do you want to tell everybody how we met Hillary?
We met Hillary out there on that extremely hot run course. We were just doing our thing, hanging out on the run course, cheering for folks. And then I think she was one of those that recognized your voice, if I recall. And she said, "That must be Andrew from the Tri-Dot podcast." And so immediately Hillary had a couple fans. And then later that evening, we got to be there as she made the final turn down that amazing finishing stretch at Ironman Coeur d'Alene. So yeah, hey, I was going to say the same thing. Shout out to Hillary. Great to see you once again, and congratulations on your Coeur d'Alene finish. And I got another one coming up, as I recall. So good luck in that one as well.
Yep, and I ran with her for a second, got to know her, and John, you were the one who noticed her bib number and was able to put her into the tracker, so we knew where Hillary was on course to cheer for her. So Hillary wants to know about bike fit. Now we're gonna do. This is one of those topics where we will have a bike fit episode with a master fitter sometime in the very near future. But just for the sake of this conversation, Hillary asks, what should we know before we go, and how should we prepare, and what should we expect out of a bike fit session?
So for me, it's especially going in, and what do you know before? It's very important to do your due diligence beforehand. My recommendation is to find the best fitter you have access to. And this is one of those things that I would say it's worth perhaps driving a certain distance. I've known athletes who have even flown to work with fitters because there are lots of them out there, but they're definitely not all created equal. I say the same thing about tattoos. Like, this is going to be with you for a very long time. Do what you have to do to find the best tattoo artist you can get, and do what you got to do. Don't just go to the closest shop and get your tattoo. Same thing with a fitter. Don't go just to the guy down the road. Oftentimes, if you buy a bike, there's somebody in-house that will do a fit. They may be a fantastic fitter, or they may just be somebody who's kind of been given some guidelines, like just some rough rules to follow that may or may not get you your best fit. So you can have that super high-end bike, but if you're not fit to it properly, it's not going to realize its benefit, and you're not going to realize your potential either. So it's critical that the fitter knows and understands the unique needs of triathletes. Triathlon represents, a segment of the market. It's not the biggest, where in this case, you may be working with a fitter who is the absolute best at fitting road cyclists. They may work with Tour de France teams and professional cyclists, but they may not know anything about triathlon. So you need to have a fitter that understands the unique physiology and needs of triathletes. And often I say you get what you pay for. Oftentimes people think, oh, well, I can just get comfortable, I can adjust the bike and it works. For me, this is one of those things where I will spend the money. This is one of those things that I really think is truly a worthwhile investment. So I would encourage you. It's a very small percentage of the cost of your bike, but again, it's going to really go a long way in helping you realize the full benefit of that bike. So again, don't necessarily go on the cheap. This is one of those things that you're going to get what you pay for. There's also a kind of a hierarchy here. It's comfort, power, and aerodynamics. Oftentimes we think exclusively about aerodynamics, but really the most important thing is that you're comfortable, because if you're not comfortable, you're not going to be able to generate the power.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to stay aero. So first is comfort, then generating the power, then being aerodynamic. I think once you get there, just one thing to be aware of is that a good fit session takes time. I would say a good fit session takes at least an hour. And it can take several hours. I've been on the bike for sometimes 2 hours or more, as if I'm on a new bike making big changes. And then I always repeat. For me, it's largely annually. I'll go back every year. So it's not necessarily a one and done kind of thing. Your body changes, your race distances, all that changes. And along with that, your fit needs to be dynamic as well. So, it's not necessarily a one and done kind of thing. Maybe not annually, but again, for me, this is one of my hotbed things. So, I'm committed to doing that as often as I need to. It's somewhere in the 1 to 2 year range. But, yeah, so, So I'm again a big advocate of getting a great bike fit.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of points, good points there, John. The fitter I work with typically takes about 2.5 hours for the initial fitting, charges around $300, and it's very thorough, uses lasers, sensor technologies, slow motion video, video analysis software. It's pretty incredible what they do there. And the follow-up fittings would be more like 90 minutes, and they typically would charge, I think it's something like $150 for the follow-ups. So it's that first one is really where they're measuring you as a human being, so they can get a really good sense of how you're going to fit on your bike. And then from then on, they have those measurements. Those don't change dramatically. From then on, they can make the fittings a little bit faster in subsequent years. I agree. You should be doing it regularly.
So I think some of those numbers may be even a bit of a shock, you know, 2.5 hours. Wow. What are they doing in that time? But yeah, that's what it takes. Mm-hmm. And then again, $300 price range is, as I would say, market for a good quality fit. So yeah, be prepared to pay give or take $300 and be there for a while.
All right, this next question exclusively is going to pro triathlete and coach Elizabeth James. This comes from Patrick Schneider from Illinois. My wife asked the question last night, how does one become a pro triathlete? Now, I have no idea, but immediately thought of this. Maybe Elizabeth James could shed some light on the question. So, Coach Elizabeth James, can you shed some light on this question?
Oh, what a fun question. So... each national governing body will have their own qualifying criteria. And so I really can't speak to what other countries require, but to earn your elite triathlon card in the US, there are a number of qualification standards that you can meet. And you can find this information on USA Triathlon, and they outline criteria like A, B, C, D, E, F. So there's quite a few different ways that you can actually qualify to be a professional triathlete, depending on if you're qualifying at the collegiate level, if you are racing draft legal events or non-drafting shorter course or like longer course events like an Ironman. So a couple examples, probably the most common ways that someone would qualify to be a professional triathlete. You can get a top 10 finish as an overall amateur at a world's event. You could finish in the top 5 in the amateur ranks at nationals, or you could get a top 3 finish as an amateur in a qualifying race. And qualifying races are often those that have a corresponding elite field and offer a particular prize purse. And so like for me, this was going to be my kind of route for qualification. So when I raced Waco 70.3 in fall 2019, I finished 2nd overall amateur female. And since there was a women's professional field with a certain amount of a prize purse there, then that worked as a qualifying race for me. And then if you meet one of those criteria, then you are eligible to apply for your elite license. So just because you meet the criteria doesn't mean that you have to accept kind of that designation. You can choose if you would like to apply for your elite license. And then through that application process, if you meet that criteria, then you would be accepted as a professional. Beyond that kind of initial application and qualifying process, then to continue racing as an elite, you have to re-qualify once every 3 years by finishing within 8% of the winner's time at a race that offers like at least a $5,000 prize purse. And so there are particular races that you can do that have a professional field, and then you need to be within 8% of the winner's time in one of those races for you to kind of re-qualify again.
Our next question comes from Cassia from Canada. She wants to know, how can we adjust our running pace for winter running in the snow? You guys have spoken lots about adjustments for heat and humidity, but what about running in snow or on ice? Thanks on behalf of all of us in Canada. Now, I'm going to throw this one to Coach Matt Bach, who probably does a little bit more of this than the rest of us.
Yeah, I live in the Northeast, so not quite Canada, but I do have our fair share of cold winters and ice and snow. I think there's kind of three different things here. From a physiological perspective, there's not really a significant difference between running in cold weather versus running in, say, moderate temperatures. TriDot's environment normalization doesn't adjust your paces to make them slower in cold temperature, like extra cold temperatures. like it would for something where if it's 90 degrees versus 55 degrees, it will adjust the paces to accommodate the higher temperatures. But that said, how much clothing you're wearing and how restricting that clothing is will affect how much your paces will be affected. So I know that when winter turns into spring and I put on shorts for the first time, my pace automatically picks up by something like 5 to 10 seconds per mile. And I know that, you know, during the winter when I'm wearing sometimes two pairs of pants, right? I might be wearing tights and a pair of pants. Maybe it's even some like thicker pants, thick socks, three shirts, thick hat, ski gloves, neck warmer, like all sorts of stuff. And there's probably a very small kind of weight thing, possibly aerodynamics a little bit. But I think the most of it is just the fact that it's kind of restricting your body from flowing the way that you'd like it to flow. So it all kind of adds up into something where there is a time detriment there. As far as like cut-off strategies, and you may have already worked out quite a bit of these living up in Canada. I don't have a treadmill. I much prefer running outdoors when conditions aren't great. And that's probably at least partially a result of my history running in high school. We had a big team, so there weren't enough treadmills for everyone. And coach was tough and knew the value of consistency. So he would make us run outside in all but the most extreme conditions. So I got a good handle on how to handle the ice and the snow. So I figured out how to run on them. You know, usually when you get up to ice, it's just a patch of ice. So shorten your stride and don't push off. Just let your momentum carry you over the slippery surface. So keep your center of gravity stable and keep it right over the foot that's on, like planted on the ground. So don't try accelerating or trying to stop, especially. I mean, a lot of people, they'll see ice, they'll get scared, they'll try to stop or try to turn and turn away from it. But that's a recipe for disaster because you'll probably end up slipping, maybe pulling a hammy or pulling a groin or something. But I run with a lot of people, and many of the people that I run with are not as good at handling the ice. And you can tell immediately that they're sort of panicky when they go over the ice, but I'll just kind of glide over it by just letting my momentum flow and just planting those feet right below, keeping that center of gravity right over the foot, and not pushing off a lot, just letting my momentum carry me through the backside of the patch of the ice and then just keep going.
All right, we're going to end the main set with back-to-back questions from athletes from Canada. This is Matt Ierson. He wants to know, and guys, I think this is the most important question of the day, so I saved it for last. How much coffee does Andrew Harley drink during the recording of each podcast? Any thoughts here, guys?
I don't think I've ever not seen Andrew with his Tri-Dot mug and a bunch of coffee in it. I'm beginning to think it's like, you know, in a wedding when your glass is bottomless because the waiters and waitresses are constantly topping it off. You don't even know how many glasses of wine you may have had. Andrew, has your wife been constantly refilling your Tri-Dot mug? You don't even know how much coffee you've had?
I wish that was the case. I wish I had that kind of a setup. I actually have one of those Ember mugs where the mug will keep the coffee at the temperature you want it kept. And so typically at my desk, that's what I use because I have the plate for it there. And so it just indefinitely keeps my coffee at 135 degrees. So I pour that first cup in the morning and I can take my time drinking it the rest of the day.
I've had the pleasure of spending some time in the Harley home. And I will say that Andrew is the resident barista, and he's very bougie with his coffee as he is with most things. So I don't think he trusts outsourcing his coffee to anyone, but I have had some mighty fine cups of coffee at Andrew's home.
I saw that Ember reheating, self-heating mug at Andrew's house when I was there, and I thought it was so cool, so I came home and bought it for my wife as a gift, but I'm the one who uses it.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
We're going to close down episode 100 with just a little reflecting on the moment. A lot of our listeners have been with us from day one, as have Jeff, John, and Elizabeth. We picked up Coach Matt Bach along the way and are happy to have his voice and expertise on board. We're also grateful for Dr. Krista Austin, Dr. BJ Leeper, Trotout founder Jeff Boer, and all of the other experts that have stopped by to teach us about this wild and crazy sport. So as we wrap up the 100th episode, Jeff, John, Elizabeth, Matt, when you think about where we started, you know, sitting at the table, recording episode one, to where we are now, what comes to mind for you? And John Mayfield, you were on the first episode with me, so let's start with you here.
So I vividly remember sitting at the table. I remember exactly where I was. I remember the night before we were set to record our first episode, and I had a similar experience to before a big A race. I was nervous. I was anxious. I had zero experience going into this, and you know, I knew it was going to be great. I knew it was going to be fun, but I was certainly nervous for it, and it was. You know, I think I even commented before we started, and I want to say I even threw out, we're getting 100 episodes in. We're going to look back on this first one. It's going to be just cringeworthy. But I will say it kind of holds up. I've listened to those episodes. I've gone back and listened to them all. And, you know, I'm still proud of them. I think they were good, even that first one, which I think we've maybe loosened up a little bit, had a little bit more fun. But, you know, I think that first episode even still holds up. I remember saying one thing in that first episode of what did we want the podcast to be? And I spoke to the fact that when I was a new triathlete and I was coming up as a coach, that there were a couple high quality podcasts that I listened to and really helped shape me as an athlete and a coach. And that's what I wanted for our podcast to be, was to be that source of information that people can really benefit from, that they can learn from, that we can share our experiences as athletes and coaches. And athletes can be better triathletes. They can better enjoy the sport. They can be more balanced and just have a better overall triathlon experience. And I really feel like over these 100 episodes, we've done a good job of doing that. I'm proud of the body of work that we've produced. And it's been a ton of fun to do it, and look forward to 100 more.
Man, yeah, this question is like walk down memory lane. There are a lot of cool memories just from the 100 episodes that we've recorded. I distinctly remember sitting in Jeff Boer's house when we were even talking about doing a podcast before we had even recorded the first episode. And there was kind of a nervous energy about it of like, oh my gosh, are we really going to do this? Do we know what we're doing? Is anybody going to listen? And then to think here we are 100 episodes later. I also remember being so nervous for that first recording. I know that we were sitting around the table talking about, man, like this is even worse than race morning. Like we've got the jitters and the stomach was in knots. That was fun. And then I just think of so many laughs along the way, from getting ready for the episodes, of having to pause the recording because we're laughing so hard, we're crying. I remember, being doubled over in my chair, just like clutching my stomach, thinking, oh my gosh, this is the best ab workout ever because my stomach hurts so bad. And then just the number of places that we've had the opportunity to record episodes. So gosh, we've recorded episodes in Arizona. I've recorded a podcast, you know, kind of remotely from St. George. I've recorded from my bedroom closet when we had construction going on in the house next door. Ones that we've done, you know, together in various locations or just remote. There's a lot of cool memories about just the places we've had the opportunity to record as well.
Wow, I can't believe that we've started this, gosh, I think back in 2019, pre-COVID, just recording on site to having to kind of handle, you know, remote recording due to the pandemic. Now we're kind of all in person again. Man, I just love that we've recorded these episodes with so many unique individuals all around the USA, just at races, at home, and just all sorts of cool things. It brings so many aspects to this podcast, the behind the scenes, just stuff that we have, created here. And it's just so fun. Each one is different. Each story is different. Each time of the year is different. So it makes them all just as cool and even cooler. But, I think one of the coolest things actually is when we're standing around at races, and you know, people walk up to us randomly, and they just recognize our voices, and they're not all in TriDot. They just have said, "Hey, I've listened to your podcast. I recognize your voices," especially Andrew. And I will say a funny story at Tulsa. I think Tulsa, back in May was the first time that someone wanted a selfie. So John, Andrew, and I were all standing next to each other, and you know, these people blew by John and I. They wanted a selfie with the Andrew from the podcast. So that's just a funny joke that Andrew got the first selfie. We all kind of get a few shout outs, but you know, I will say that Andrew is the voice, and Andrew is has done a great job. So it's been a great opportunity being a part of these podcasts. Thank you, Andrew.
Well, I only came on fairly recently, unlike many of you who are longtime veterans of staffers at TriDot, but I have known you guys for a long time. So I worked with Andrew and the TriDot team on sponsorship when I was at UCAN, because UCAN is a sponsor of TriDot, and I brought Tim O'Donnell onto the show. I was on the episode, I think it was 51 or so, when I was on with Dr. Krista Austin talking about Red S. And then at the Endurance Exchange meeting, I met all of you guys at the Endurance Exchange in, I think it was early 2020, right before all this craziness happened with the pandemic. So I got to meet all of you and put a face to all the names, and really get to, you know, get an understanding of where the business was going with TriDot, and just who you all were as people. And just, it's been, I mean, it was a blast. It was really fun getting to meet all of you, and you know, always kind of knew this would be an amazing place to work.
Well, thank you all so much for those thoughts. I'm sure all of our listeners agree with me in saying I am thankful for all of you just lending your time, your energy, your expertise to the show. I mean, you each give so much of your own coaching knowledge away for free every single week. And we, the athletes of TriDot, the athletes that listen to the show, we're all the beneficiaries of that. For me, as I reflect on 100 shows down, I just wanted to take a second and share kind of the short version of the origin story of the show. It really all goes back to August, September of 2019. I was working for a television network producing a couple of live TV shows at the time. I was a TriDot athlete. I had raced several local races, some sprints and Olympics. I had done 170.3 training with TriDot. And two key things happened around that same time, August, September 2019, that sparked the TriDot podcast. Number one, the next season of the NFL, the National Football League, was starting up here in the States. And so I was getting ready for the fantasy football draft I do with my college buddies. And I started listening to a fantasy football podcast called The Fantasy Footballers. The show was an hour long, and it quickly became kind of my go-to favorite thing to listen to on those indoor training rides and all of those runs that were about an hour long. And it was just three guys sitting around on microphones, giving their insight and having fun, just talking about fantasy football. And it was fun to listen to. And several times I thought to myself, geez, I bet it would just be a ton of fun to produce a podcast like this, talking about something I'm passionate about. Number two, that same fall, August, September, I signed up for Ironman Texas. And when I did, it just exponentially ramped up my interest in learning more about how to get better in this stupid, wild, crazy sport. And so I started looking on YouTube and Google and just podcasts for shows or people that had helpful information. And don't get me wrong, there are some great triathlon personalities out there. There are some great podcasts in this space and everything, but I just didn't feel like anything I was finding met me where I was as an everyday athlete who needed to know how other everyday athletes were navigating their experience in triathlon. So those two things really came together right about the same time. I thought doing a podcast would be fun, and I was looking to learn more about triathlon. So Labor Day weekend, early September of 2019, I was really rolling around in my head what it would be like to start a podcast and a YouTube channel solely dedicated to helping average everyday triathletes enjoy the sport. And I thought TriDot was the perfect conduit for this. I believed in the training as an athlete, using it myself. I knew there were top shelf coaches and pros on staff, and I knew TriDot was passionate about helping athletes succeed and genuinely cared about us as people and not just as users. And so long story short, I sent an email to the team at TriDot, basically just pitching the idea that would lead to the TriDot podcast. And after a few phone calls with TriDot founder Jeff Buer, where we talked and dreamed about what this show could be, it led to me coming on staff full-time to produce and host the show. And geez, I had no idea, you know, that it would lead to me traveling around the country, meeting athletes, hearing their stories, cheering them on at the races. I had no idea it would lead to me hosting this thing. In my original vision, I was just going to produce it. And, you know, other folks from the team would get to shine on the microphone. So to have my voice be recognized at races and camps, it's just wild. And I'm forever thankful. It's not lost on me that for a media guy who loves triathlon, I basically have my dream job. And I, of course, from all this, you know, I'm excited to keep this thing rolling. You know, we've got more topics to hit. We've got more learning to do. And we've got more room for all of our listeners from the front of the pack to the middle of the pack into the back of the pack to enjoy this sport and be part of the tribe. Well, that's it for today, folks. I want to thank Tridot's very own Jeff Rains, John Mayfield, Matt Buck, and Elizabeth James for answering some super great audience swim, bike, run, and triathlon questions today. Big thanks to Tritats and Precision Hydration for partnering with us on today's show. Head to precisionhydration.com to learn more about your own hydration needs. And be sure to use code TRIDOT10 when you check out with some of their fantastic hydration and fueling products. And quick plug, actually, for next week's show, Andy Blow from Precision Hydration will join us to talk about crafting a race day hydration strategy. I can't wait. It's going to be great. Enjoying the podcast? Have any triathlon questions or topics you want to hear us talk about? Head to tridot.com/podcast and click on Submit Feedback to let us know what you're thinking. We'll do it all again soon. Until then, happy training.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.